Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Well, Paul. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I can't hear myself for some reason. Hold on. Okay, there you go.
There we go.
I'm good?
You're good.
All right. Well. All I have to say to you, Mr. Roberts.
Yes.
Honest to God, you know, I mean, we've been doing this thing for 2 years. Almost 2 years, right? We closed 2 years?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was February. 2 years. And we put you in the hot seat, and I'm thinking it's just going to be crickets.
Wow, you had high expectations.
Oh, you didn't. What were you thinking? Cicadas? Okay. But, so I thought, well, you know, we're planning to put him in a hot seat.
We had a guest fallout.
We thought we'd wing it, which was we usually do sometimes on the show. And I'm just getting the final count here. So that was last April 5th, and we did a live feed on Facebook.
Right. YouTube and Facebook.
About your illustrious story, infamous story, whichever
you want to
call it.
Yeah, kind of the story. I'm kind of if I'm the poster child for baby boomers, then here's my story, and I think it mirrors, as crazy as it was, it's probably an extreme version of what a lot of other people have been through, lots of changes in your life, evolution over time. Finding yourself in a place that you never thought you'd
be. So are you ready for the big unveiling?
Drum roll. I should get a drum roll. Apparently.
Okay. Get a drum roll. You need a drum roll for this.
I can't find
one. Okay. No drum roll. Okay. I'll do one. I'm tapping on the microphone. Okay. We had 628 views of this video. Now, just to give you an idea, because you haven't been steadily popular all week, okay, is when we got off the air, after, you know, ranting for 2 hours or talking for 2 hours, we had almost 300 views of the video.
Wow.
Okay. And
why?
And we had feedback while we were on the air.
Yeah.
With people that were basically watching. Now, the joke between me and Paul here, and by the way, if you're listening, it's only through octalkradio.net today and clicking the listen live button.
We'll do video again,
but we don't have a guest in the
we have a call in
today.
Guest
we have a call in guest about 12:30.
Right.
Jeff Cole, seasoned hospitality, wellness, and spa industry professional, and we're going to talk about how those industries are blending together and how. You know, the baby boomer who is not their father's senior is not a, oh, I'm so glad I have what I have. Thank you so much for giving it to me. The baby boomer's mantra is, I want it all. I want it now. Why don't I have it already?
Yeah.
Okay. And so when it comes to hospitality and wellness,
you
know, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Roberts. PR for short.
Yeah.
Okay. But and if you want to know why PR, then you go watch the video.
The last episode.
Last episode. But we're going
to
talk to Jeff about that. You know how those industries are blending together. The lines are starting to blur between that in the provision of wellness, health, nutrition,
and hospitality.
Right. It's
not
really,
just being pampered anymore.
It's not. It's now it's a regiment of wellness. And if you care about yourself, then you act in certain ways and you look out for that individualized program. Anyway,
because if baby boomers are going to pamper themselves, we're not going to call it pampering. We're going to call it wellness. We're going to say that there's some purpose and meaning to it. We're not just going to say, yeah, we like.
Well, that's why they don't call them pampers. They call them depends.
Yeah. Okay. That's totally true.
So he's not going to pamper themselves. They're going to depends themselves. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, I never thought of it. That's pretty clever.
Yes. Right. Yeah, but can you imagine this, a baby boomer, like, pampers?
No, I'm not going to be pampered. I don't like being pampered, but I like...
Well, you have a problem being pampered because you're from the Midwest and you're from a boomer. Okay, so, again, a lot of the stuff we're touching on is stuff that's happened on the show before.
Puritan ethic.
Puritan ethic, right.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting... And we wanted to kind of just talk about this for a minute because we are constantly looking for ways to be effective in getting a message across to, you know.
And the message is what? That we're all on this journey and we're headed into a new uncharted territory the next chapter, the final frontier, old age, rebirth.
And it can be both. In many cases, it actually is both. It's scary as heck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also kind of exciting,
yes.
Right? And if you think about points in your life where it wasn't about necessarily aging or getting closer to the end of your life, that you experienced those two euphoric feelings, that scared to death mm-hmm. and excited as heck.
When I opened my first business when I was 30, yeah, around 30. I was excited, but I was scared.
About to get married?
Excited, scared.
Right. About to have a child along?
Excited, scared.
Right. A first job?
Right.
Right. I mean, those are feelings that I think we forget that when we embrace them by choice or otherwise,
mm-hmm.
those were actually pretty paradigm shift moments in our lives.
When I used to perform, getting up on stage was both frightening and exciting. I was scared to death to do it, and you couldn't pull me off when I got up there.
See the stuff that you learn about Paul Roberts when you're on the show. What did you perform?
Oh, I was a big performer. As I said during that, go back.
I mean, what are we talking? Ukuleles? We're talking
ukulele. I was a big harmonica.
No, you were not.
I was
you?
A kazoo, kazoo player.
Kazoo player.
I had a band in high school. It was a 50s band. That was when Sha Na Na and all that stuff was big. So we did songs of the 50s. We dressed up like greasers.
Google it, people.
Google it. Yeah, you can find it. Just the Crescendos. And we were like sort of,
Is that what your group was called?
We
the Crescendos?
Called Crescendos, because we got gradually louder as we went on. That was
that
our only distinguishing
factor. The beer that was being drunk by the band.
We got louder and louder. And so we were in suburban Detroit. In those few years, we made a name for ourselves, mostly playing high schools and bar mitzvahs and junior highs. And we played a couple other places, some clubs and stuff, and we did all sorts of things. So we were kind of known in that area. And we still have – it's interesting. People will still bring that up from my high school years. If you go look at my Facebook page, there's still references from time to time of that period of time. So I had a band. And that grew out because I was in choir and I was in the musicals in high school and did all that. I was really into the performing arts in those days.
So let me just kind of touch on something.
And later I was a nude dancer, but that was a whole different thing. No.
I don't know how to take the show any further after that. I mean, you know,
it was just performance. I only did it one night.
I feel like I need to go shower. But you know what? Let me ask you this.
Because, radio? It was a radio performer.
Yeah, well, you know, and people are going, like, you know what? There goes Rod and Paul again, just, you know.
Vamping,
right? But I will tell you, it's really funny because you just said something I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Right? You looked at all the stuff that you just talked about.
Right.
In a positive manner.
Yes.
Right? It actually was sort of a fond memory, beyond fond memory, probably. Like, for the moments that you were just mentioning and remembering and reflecting, by the way, remember? Okay.
Reflections
was the name of Paul's company.
PR
and that what we ended up with last week, basically, a two-hour reflection on Paul's life.
Yeah.
But you were reflecting on stuff, what you were just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And for a split second, you were kind of back in that moment of feeling good about it, right?
Yes, right.
Okay.
In some ways, the greatest years of my life, those are my, like my father talked about the war years, as awful as World War II was for him, it transformed his life. He went from being a little kid who'd never been outside the city to flying bomber planes and seeing the world and came back an officer and a gentleman and said, I'm not going to go work in the factory anymore. That fundamentally changed. It was horrible to experience, but he only chose to talk about the good experiences. So in the same, now, hardly, I didn't go through war, but it was frightening. It was scary. It was uncertain and all that. I don't remember any of that. I just remember the euphoria of doing it.
But you also forget the euphoria of doing it until you basically find yourself talking about it, right?
Yes, right. Because it's so long ago, right?
So and we talk about how we don't talk enough, we don't have conversations enough anymore, mm-hmm. unless it's some sort of a to do list or an agenda. And you know, this is almost like old tape running here for people who've listened in. But
what people are saying right now, get to the point. The
point is, overall arching topic today is sort of wellness.
Yes.
And we're doing this in preparation because in June, there's Global Wellness Day.
Yes.
Which we'll do a focus on. But instead of just focusing everything on that day, we're intermittently introducing some stuff with Jeff, for example, here in the next half hour of the show, or the last half hour of the show, and then maybe having another more in-depth conversation with him mm-hmm. about this. Because, again, wellness used to be a thing in a lot of people's minds, thought of as this is what I get when I go to the hospital because I need some help, or I go see a doctor.
When did they start calling it wellness? When did that word spring up out of the well of our lexicon here?
That's interesting. I'll look it up in a minute here. Right? I know that it's
stop
not
being health and start being wellness.
Well, I don't think it was something new. To be honest with you, I think if you remember of a period where the cornflakes was introduced and invented.
Kellogg's was because he was a vegetarian, I guess, or something.
Right, and remember the whole Kellogg program, and it wasn't just cornflakes. That was sort of a product of the nutritional plan.
You need a brand and everything.
But wellness, I think.
But the term wellness, when I was a kid, there weren't wellness clinics. You didn't talk about wellness. There weren't wellness programs. It was health.
It was health by the time you came around. But I think it existed
in the 20s
before.
Earlier,
yes,
so.
I think it did. I think there was a period, I would probably say maybe even like 20s, 30s, mm-hmm. where people were seeking more of a balanced life.
Curative. You know,
it was more of a, what do they call it? Like the luxury of the upper middle class or the intelligentsia in a way, or you know, the intellectual elite, that they were seeking help. No different than maybe I think those who were in their sixties, which were seeking that sort of enlightenment and self actualization.
That's when the first mineral spas popped up. People didn't go
exactly.
The Indians did, and other people did, but that's when mineral spas like Hot Springs, Arkansas, and other places popped up. And mostly it was in reaction. My vague historical recollection of it and studying history as much as I've done seems to be, I would guess it was more in result of the enormous worldwide sicknesses that were taking place, tuberculosis, TB, all these horrible diseases, polio, that were frightening people and scaring people in the 20s and 30s. We had a president that had polio.
Yeah,
and
FDR
was paralyzed. Everybody, you watch the Dead End Kids. Go watch the old Bowery Boys Dead End Kids, and there was a kid TB in there who had tuberculosis and coughed all the time. That was a common experience for people to see polio. There was the great flu, influenza, Spanish flu of 1919. I think it was, to kill 20 million people around the world.
Yep.
So this, they were looking for cures. They were looking for spas to go and be cured of these illnesses.
Right. Well, and I looked it up, and I just want to give a shout out to one of the entities that's out there that I'm familiar with because of the spine industry that does really amazing work, and it's the Global Wellness Institute, and the Global Wellness Institute can be found at globalwellnessinstitute.org. And I went and I looked up the history of wellness, and I'm not going to go through all of it because it goes back, they track it back to the year 3000 BC.
Well, yeah.
And Ayurveda treatments that are very much localized, I think.
India. Ayurvedic.
Right? Ayurvedic. And, but it's Ayurvedic is not just oil dripping on your head, it's nutrition, it's what you feed your body, it's the balance of all elements.
So what do they say? When did wellness become?
Well, so I know I'm just going to bring it kind of to the West, and I'm going to just say certain dates, like this is, you know, like 1650. You know,
1650.
Yes,
date that will still live in
dates,
history.
Dates, the use of the word wellness, meaning the opposite of illness.
Oh, okay.
By the way, did you know that if you take the I out of illness and you replace it with the we, it becomes wellness?
Ooh, wow. Let's talk about that. So if you take the I out, the me out, the I out, and turn it into we, you become go from
we ill change to illness
wellness.
To wellness.
Wow. Boy, that's something that should be on a poster somewhere. Take the I out and you begin put
when we remove the I in illness with the we in we
and add a we to
and
it.
Add a we to it, it becomes wellness. When we stop looking at the me and we look at the we in this topic of health as a community.
What happens if you put P in there? P we? No, that doesn't work. Okay.
Again, Paul Roberts. Okay, but the word wellness, meaning the opposite of illness.
I never thought of that.
Or the state of being well, or in good health, dates to 1650, according to the Oxford English Dictionary.
Who said it in 1650? Just some guy.
Earliest published reference, thank you very much for setting me up, is from the 1654 dietary entry of Sir Richard Archibald Johnston, quote, I bless God for my daughter's wellness. It's spelled W-E-A-L. N-E-S-S-E.
Didn't Johnson, they named some body part after him later on as a result.
The first citation with modern spelling is from 1655 letter from Dorothy Osborne to her husband, Sir William Temple. Quote, you never send me any of the new phrases of the town. Pray what is meant by wellness is unwellness. I mean, whatever. So 1650. Then the German.
There's a
German reference for a physician, German physician from 1790.
I know, but we never.
And so
used,
forth and so on.
But
hold on.
I'm not going to go through all these.
No,
obscure
but I'm.
References.
But then I'm going to go to the 1900s.
Okay, good.
John Harvey Kellogg.
Yes.
Director of the Battle Creek, Michigan Sanitarium.
Yes, where people were sent who had
tuberculosis.
Right.
Okay. Espouses a healthy diet, exercise, fresh air, hydrotherapy, and learning to stay well. And that's where, again, it was early 1900s, FDR. Mm-hmm.
Before that, it was Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Vigorous exercise was part of – that was when I started thinking that it was good. Because we had gotten away from that. We were living more indoors and in cities, and we had gotten away from outdoor ruggedness.
So what John Harvey Kellogg was calling for is, quote, learning to stay well. Okay, naturopathy.
I had never can pronounce that.
Naturopathy. Focused on the body's ability to heal itself through dietary and lifestyle changes. Herbs, massage, and joint manipulation also spreads to the U.S. from Europe. Austrian philosopher Rudolf Steiner.
Same idea.
Develops a spiritual
homeopathic medicines. You take a little bit, and your body builds up an immunity to it.
Exactly.
That. Right.
And then the Carnegie Foundation. Flexner Report in 1910, a critique of North American medical education system for lack of standards and scientific rigor questions the validity of all forms of medicine other than biomedicine, resulting in most alternative systems being dropped from mainstream medical education and setting the stage for our modern disease-oriented evidence-based medicine. So it's interesting. In 1900s, there was a beginning of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1910, there was a dropping of that aspect of it.
Right,
and yet it survived all this time.
Because we went back to disease. Let's focus on a disease and
disease-oriented evidence-based medicine.
Yeah, and that's when they first started using science to kill. Up until that point, we didn't have a drug to take in 1900 to cure polio or tuberculosis. There was no drug industry then, so you had to find other natural means to heal yourself.
Well, and we had like in the 20th century it was still spreading and getting a little bit more serious, and then 21st century, which yes, we are all in the 21st century, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
you told me to make if I wanted to have a show, so that's all. But in 2010, New York Times article on the word concept of wellness noted that when Dan Rather did a 60-minute segment on the topic in 1979, he intoned wellness. There's a word you don't hear every day.
Yes, thank you, Dan.
But more than three decades later,
you hear it every day.
The New York Times notes wellness is in fact a word that Americans might hear every day.
Yeah.
And it's more than Americans because in the 21st century, the global wellness movement and market reach a dramatic tipping point. Fitness, diet, healthy living and well-being concept and offerings proliferate wildly.
So would you say that wellness, as I'm listening to you explain this, is wellness, if I could restate this, is wellness a holistic approach? That's another 60s kind of word.
Well, wellness.
It's not just looking at something and fixing it. It's an overarching.
It's actually very. It's actually very simple. I mean, in its application, and we'll talk about this with Jeff. In its application, it's not simple, because what most people try to do, unfortunately, in modern Western society. Some
take a pill.
Some more than others is, well, that's sort of the preventive medicine side of it. I got a problem, I'm going to go take a pill for it.
Right.
But no, they try to put everything in a standardized box and pitch it because it's easier to sell, it's easier to market if I categorize you into falling in one of so many categories.
Yeah, well, and that's the way we break down everything. When you search on the internet, you don't search vaguely, you search for something specific, a specialist, you search for an oncologist.
Right. But when it comes to wellness or well-being. It's as individual as what you were saying when you were referring to your own memories and positive points in your life. There's some commonality, but I think that's where it breaks down currently, is that we have not figured out a way to allow for that individualized. Everybody will say it's one-on-one, and you know we really cater to everybody's needs. Right. But you cater to everybody's needs as long as it falls into some sort of a checklist.
Yeah, because don't we want to stand? Don't I want, especially in today's world? Give me the 5 steps to wellness. Give me the 3 things I need to do tomorrow.
Right, but, and here's the interesting opportunity.
Don't tell me it varies by
It does, because here's the interesting opportunity. Here's the interesting opportunity. You don't have to basically go somewhere else for your full regimen of wellness.
What?
You can cater your own wellness package to your own needs.
But that means that we're all our own, heal thyself, we're all our own physicians. And we may or may not know.
So,
we know our body, yes, we're supposedly know our body and in tune with our body, maybe, and what it does and what it reacts to. I like this, I don't like this, I don't do well under this. But, on a broader sense, I don't know how to cure myself. So, I'm not just going to, like the Indians, wander around and eat different roots until I find one that makes me feel better.
So you asked me, what is wellness?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you that wellness is as simple as the state of being in good health, especially as an actively pursued goal. Now, the emphasis on the word is actively pursued.
And a goal. A goal is something you're always seeking to attain but probably never get there.
Right. And so what does that say? That says it's not something you go
it's
on.
An ideal
because
you shoot for.
Because you're trying to get into a bikini to go to, you know, not you and me, but get in a bikini because you're
in a bikini.
I do not need that visual. I keep telling you. I was already taking a shower because of your naked performance thing and whatever. Interpretive art.
I rolled around in paint and made a statement. I used my body as a paintbrush.
But I think that's kind of the interesting opportunity and yet at the same time challenge, is that you have to take personal accountability of your wellness.
I hate that.
Right. Yes, that's another characteristic of your generation.
It's not my fault. It's somebody else's fault.
That's another characteristic of Paul's generation.
Yeah.
But you have to take personal accountability for it. And it's interesting how that concept of wellness and that concept of personal accountability for your well-being translates into different things.
But let me stop you right there, because I'm out of all humor, there is a seed of truth there. I really don't like this idea. As much as I espouse it sometimes, and part of me believes, my father was a very big believer in personal responsibility. Don't blame the world for your troubles. You know, start with you.
I think we're about to have a epiphany moment again on this show.
I think so. So listen up. Here we go. Let's get the, we'll get a gong.
We have epiphany music.
All right.
We have epiphany music.
And I have a different view of personal responsibility. You see it as empowering. I see it as
the man.
Yeah, or it's something. It's negative somehow. I don't know how to put it into terms.
Hold on, Paul. Would you get on my couch, please?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I don't know why you're always espousing. Don't put me in a box. It's whatever you want it to be. Everybody's different. There's no regimen that works for everybody. Everybody's unique. Everybody's different. Complete individualism.
Right.
I can't predict anything. And I hate that. We have to have some predictive models that more than likely, if you smoke, it's not good for you. There are people that can smoke till they're 90, but it's probably not a good thing for people to smoke. So society's been moving towards these norms. Don't eat this. Sugar's probably bad. Cigarettes are probably bad. Alcohol. Anything but moderation is probably bad. All these things, and so we're always trying to mandate these things, and then there's this pushback that says, screw you, if I want to eat 87 cups of coffee or 50 eggs, I'll do whatever I want. There's no norm, there's no rules.
Right, but you see, that's how myopic the thinking is when it comes to wellness. Okay, because you're referring to one
standards.
Aspect. Well, you're referring to one aspect of wellness, which is physical wellness.
Yes.
There are 6 dimensions to wellness.
Oh, you're making this so complicated.
Okay.
And that's the other thing. You like the complexity. whereas most of us want to take complex things and turn them into simple things.
But that's not
reality.
The
one rule to live by.
But that's not reality.
The two, it's my reality. People want to turn it into something simple.
How's that working out for you?
As long as I stay in my bubble and pretend and click my heels together over and over again and say, I want to go home, I want to go home.
You know, the visual of you wearing Dorothy red slippers, okay,
performing
a naked interpretive art piece.
Rolling around
and then,
in mud.
And then, you know, that's just too much for me.
But no, seriously, I think
it's not my wellness
goal. I think you lose most people when you break it down that far.
I'll say again that there are six dimensions of wellness. Physical wellness is one of them, which is the one we talk about all the time. But there's also social wellness. That's not social media wellness.
Jeff's listening now.
Hi, Jeff. I was just going through and telling Paul that, you know, we tend to get stuck on this aspect of healthy eating and this and that.
Things
and
you should do and shouldn't do.
Shouldn't do. And Paul being...
Cigarettes.
You know, he's accusing me of being... my generation, a next generation, which no wonder we don't get any respect from you guys, we like things that are complex versus simple.
More than we do, don't like to be put into a box. You like to be everybody's themselves. Everybody's unique. There is no rule that works for everybody.
Oh, my God. Did we actually believe your boomer mantra then?
Well, we said it. We didn't believe it.
Yeah, so do as I say, not as I do.
Okay, we didn't really say it. So, we like the fact that we can break it down into, give it to me quick. Give me the five rules, the three things, the two ways.
So I'm going to give you the six dimensions of wellness.
Six dimensions.
Yes,
that's
because all the stuff you complained about, all the stuff you were just kicking like a wild horse stuck in a stall about, okay, have to do with one dimension.
Yes,
which is physical.
Still the one that matters.
Your habits, your nutrition, your whether you smoke, you don't.
Because I'm getting old.
Whatever.
I'm only worried about the body. The rest of it.
Okay, what about your emotional wellness? What about your...
I grew up in the Midwest. We didn't have any emotions.
You didn't have any emotional wellness.
We didn't have any emotions.
That's not true. I'm from the Midwest as well.
Boom! Did I not mention that Jeff was
did
from
you
the
grow
Midwest?
Up in... Nobody cried. Nobody had any emotions. We were supposed to be tough, right?
That's right.
Okay, so, right. Well, since Jeff has jumped into the ring here... Right?
Some emotions. Forget
let's,
that
let's,
one.
Let's take a minute here. I just want to say there's aspects of wellness, and we'll talk about a little bit of them because I think it's a good lead into what...
Give
we'll
me
talk
the six.
Here.
I'm struggling.
No, I'm not giving you the six. Right. I want Jeff to introduce himself. So for everybody who's listening, welcome Jeff Cole to the show. And Jeff, why don't you give a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. Thank you for having me on today. It's just a pleasure. And another Midwestern person on is always a lot of fun.
I'm from Michigan, mostly. Yeah.
Okay. I'm from Wisconsin, mostly.
I grew up. I did live in Milwaukee for a short period of time. So.
Great. So I've spent the better part of my career in the wellness industry, everything from the fitness side to the spiritual and emotional side to the relaxation side, and done that with companies from the Walt Disney Company, Princess Cruise Lines, Elizabeth Arden. I'm really looking at all aspects, and people tend to get boxed in, and what I've found in their wellness thinking too, and you guys were just talking about it, gosh, I have to go get in a workout because that's my wellness routine. And,
yeah.
You know, they don't step back and take a look at I like to say, the tree of wellness that has many, many aspects, all of which do something good for them and their well-being.
Oh, and you know, you're very modest, Jeff. By the way, I mean the gentleman's been in this thing, in this hospitality industry and wellness industry for over 25 years. It's not a short period of time. He's seen a lot of changes. I haven't been in there that long, and this industry has just changed completely from like the days of the late 90s to where it's just kind of just leaps and bounds from where it was, but with still a lot of room and opportunity to grow. But like you were saying, you know, he was involved with the Disney Company, Disney Institute, Cruise Lines, Princess Cruise Lines, Elizabeth Arden, Red Door Spas, for those who follow the spa industry,
famous, yeah.
Very, very innovative kind of and very key entity in that field. And what we're talking about, what I was talking about with Jeff earlier is that, you know, some of the stuff you and I touched on, Paul, before in the lead-up, is that there is not a one-size-fits-all.
But in today's world, in a Twitter world, give me the two. We live in a 60-second society, I've always said. Give me the two steps, the three ways, the five tips. I don't want anything more than five. Five's a magic number. I can't, because I can only count one hand, one, two, three, four, five. And we start getting to six or 16 or 60. You lose a lot of people, I think. In my generation, maybe in your generation, that's exciting because there's 60
baloney,
ways to get
healthy. Baloney. The six dimensions of wellness are stuff that you are engaged in. You just don't frame it in that mindset. You don't think of it as wellness. And yet any one of those six parts, if it is underserved, under-maintained, under, quote-unquote, pampered, not to use a word that, you know, maybe scary for you at this point in your life, right? We're talking about how pampers basically became depends as people got older,
yes,
Jeff,
right.
So, you know. But, right, so physical wellness.
Got that one.
Easy one to understand. Social wellness.
Mm.
Okay.
Never think about that.
Well, it's different for you and for me and for a Gen X or a millennial, right? Because socialization in its own nature varies from person to person. Some people have a small, close-knit circle of friends.
Right.
Some people need to have a larger friend.
I have 6,000 followers on Facebook.
And how many of them do you feel socially connected to?
Well, it's not the point. I have a successful
social
life.
No, the right
life.
Answer is the only person sitting in this room with you. Right? but
I was waiting for that.
and then you have emotional wellness.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I grew up in an area when we were supposed to be sort of emotionally stunted. You weren't supposed to show a lot of emotion. I'm in my 60s in the Midwest.
How are you doing now?
I've gotten better, but it's still a struggle.
Okay.
Emotions for men of my age, I think, are still a struggle.
Spiritual wellness?
Yeah, well, I think we've come full circle. I grew up in I'm Catholic, so I grew up in a very spiritual world. That was part of it. It was a foundation going to church.
Occupational wellness?
Well, that's where all entrepreneurs, so yeah, we've all left corporate society to go find our own path here.
No, but you see, you're just giving me the friggin', you know...
Party line.
You're just giving me the party line. You're not telling me that in doing what you're doing right now...
Yes.
You have a sense of fulfillment that you probably didn't have before or in a different way than you had before.
That's true.
Because it brings together, like we talked about
different
last week,
elements
the
of
different
my
elements
life.
Of your life in a culmination in an encore act, right?
Right.
That is an occupational wellness factor.
Okay.
Right? The fact that you don't see that you have to stop doing this until you decide. Like we talked about, this is the encore, mm-hmm. which is the best part. This is the dessert of life right now, mm-hmm. and nobody can tell you how much.
You know, the other interesting thing, just a quick, another little, here, it's another ta-da moment here. Let me get the gong here.
He's got a gong. Yeah, God. Okay.
It just occurred to me that one of the beauties of being in the encore part of the performance, I was a performer, I'd go on stage or I'd sing, and there was a set we had to follow, right? Or a play you had to follow, three acts. But when you come on for the encore, only you decide when you're going to leave.
Let that sink in. This is an encore part, encore, what they call encore career.
Right, encore stage.
But a lot
life.
Of people are referring to encore as being, you get another chance to actually work. But you're working in a manner that's different. You're working for reasons that are different. You're looking for fulfillment in a different way.
When the artist goes out on stage to do an encore, he or she decides, is it one song, five songs? They can stay out there for an hour. They can stay out there for 5 minutes. Up to them. They no longer have to follow the set list, the expectation. You never know.
So it means at this point in your life, Paul, mm-hmm. whereas you're allowing yourself to be scared of what the unknown is.
Right.
You are actually in more command of your destiny today than you were before.
Wow. Never thought of that.
Right? That's your occupational wellness. And then add to that the sixth one, which is intellectual wellness.
I don't think we focus on that one much anymore. Not the dumbing down of America here.
Right, but still, even though you may be sourcing out wacky intellectual sources, you're still basically seeking, you know. And by the way, you know, things like this can manifest themselves very simply. Like, you know, are you a person that contributes to your environment, to your community? Okay. Do you build better living spaces and social networks? Do you participate in bringing people together? Right. Do you have a belief system of values that you pass on to, in your case, you know, your grandson, for example? Right. Mm-hmm. Those are all aspects of wellness. And yet a lot of these are part interwoven into our lives, but we don't think of them as being the matrix of wellness.
So let's bring back your guest in this now that we've ranted, he's listened to us. How have all of these six elements been incorporated into the world of hospitality?
Jeff, can I put you on the spot for a second just to give a reference? I mean, how old are you?
Uh-oh. I'm 59.
Okay. Oh, okay. You're right. You're around the same. I'm 61.
So he's younger than you.
Yeah, he was
older than me. So give your own personal take on this, Jeff.
You know, I think that I like the six areas. I look at wellness in even a little broader perspective of, can I get a wellness experience out of everything I do? And I think of that, and I was talking about this earlier, a lot of people, their only wellness experience may be when they go get their hair cut or get their hair styled.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a relaxing time for them, and they should look at that as achieving part of their wellness goal. Because even when you simplify it to the six, for many people it's going to be hard to even imagine how they get to one of those.
Yeah, right.
So looking at those times when you're, for some people, that could be simply taking a drive through a park. And that's a wellness experience for them because they are relaxing and they are taking time for themselves.
So you've worked, but here's my question. You've worked with all these big chains, Red Door, spas, Disney Cruises, I mean, well-known brands here. Are you seeing, when people go somewhere to do something, on a cruise, at a spa, at a hotel, are these properties, are these brands trying to hit all of those sweet spots, all of those different elements? Well, they're trying to make it intellectually stimulating and emotionally stimulating, and I don't know if you can make it occupationally stimulating, maybe for the people that work there. Are they trying to make it feel like wellness and feel less like just a one-off experience?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I would say that they're achieving it in some areas. But they're not trying to do that. It's happening just because, I mean, let's use Disney as an example.
Right.
You go experience a great ride or a great show at Disney, you've had a potential wellness experience because you've relaxed, you've enjoyed, you've laughed, mm-hmm. you've cried, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, right.
But that probably, in most everywhere I've been, there hasn't been a thought process of how does this touch on the wellness arena. And how does it touch on the categories? And I think that's where the opportunity really arises in the hospitality and many other industries. Is they're delivering it already in some aspects.
Right.
No one knows it.
Well, and that's what I was referring to with Paul. I mean, you are doing some stuff that you just, definition-wise, doesn't fall into that basket that you define as wing wellness because you consider that if you're not struggling on a machine, if you're not struggling with a diet, if you're not, you know, being forced to eat stuff that wouldn't be your first
avoiding
choice,
things
then
that
you're
I
not
really want.
Being healthy,
right.
And that's the only aspect of wellness. And so, Jeff, I'll ask you this. Do you think, I mean, it's just occurring to me based on what you and I talked about earlier, you know, where your wife, Michelle, basically uses the word, we were joking, I told him, I said, if I hear the word wow factor anymore, I'm going to throw up, right? Because it means nothing, right?
Right.
And yet it's used regularly, and he said that in the case of Michelle, his wife, is basically she uses the word fun. Now, that's a word that we all use, right? But maybe we don't relate it to. So is it a question of terminology, Jeff, you think? Do you think that we just emphasize the word wellness too much when we should be really more interested in how to describe it in different ways?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, we could put 20 people on the phone and we'd get 20 answers as to what they think wellness
is. Yeah, exactly. Right.
And you know, Michelle has been, I just chuckle every time we sit in meetings and she says, look, if it isn't fun, no one's going to do this.
Right.
If it is fun, people are going to enjoy, they're going to relax, and they're going to have a great time.
Right.
That is a piece of their wellness program.
But right. You know what I discovered about the word fun when I used to be in PR, and I was in the entertainment industry, and then I worked with restaurants and other things through the years. Everybody wants to say overtly, this is fun. It's a fun-filled day. It's a fun experience. It's a fun place to go. The minute you say it's fun, the minute you advertise
it stops
it's fun,
being fun.
It stops being fun. Not, you well, can't I, say it's fun. It has to be fun.
Exactly. It's the experience that defines fun, not because someone tells me it's going to be fun.
Right. Won't it be fun?
Well, and the way you absorb that fun endorphins, if you will, is different, right? Everybody translates that differently. It's an extremely personal experience,
right,
on that level. And so I look at the fact, you know, you're talking about, oh, things are complex, you know, I like complexity and like stuff. I think that's really where the rubber meets the road, is to allow for that, to build the environments that allow for that individual,
right,
individualized immersion.
So there are layers of fun. There's the outside layer. And then other people can go deeper. This is like a Zen experience here.
You can go deeper. I'll tell you something. Jeff, I'm sorry. I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second. But for a second? What?
Here we go.
Have you met Mr. Paul Roberts, Jeff?
For a second.
This is my nemesis and my sidekick here.
Do your shopping and come back.
Okay. No. Just hold on. I remember one time being in design school,
yes,
all right, and I was doing great, and I was elevating the bar on myself. I was really just challenging myself, which was an awesome, different experience for me. I had never experienced that in my previous academic pursuits.
Intellectual wellness.
Right. And I was literally challenging myself. It's like, where do I go next quarter? Where do I go next semester, right? And then all of a sudden, I hit the equivalent of a writer's block. Hmm. I couldn't design myself out of a paper bag.
Hmm.
Okay? And for a moment, I started, why? What happened? You know, and I just kind of let myself be. I realized I'm a kind of a product of my generation. I designed the way that we as a TV generation absorb, which is basically the design that I do you walk into the space and you get a snippet or a synopsis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of get a sense of what you are anticipating to experience.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you delve closer and deeper into the space, the elements that you find both support your initial assumption, but then allow you a deeper exposure and immersion into it.
If you're open to it. If you're not right, dealing with what they call something bias, where you see only what you want to see.
Well, but I think that's like to Jeff's point, kind of maybe based on, you know, where he was working. Now, that's, we talked about Disney. Disney is providing a fantasy environment, but the authenticity of that fantasy environment, the depth of that fantasy environment, the immersion of that fantasy environment, while you are there,
mm-hmm,
that's real.
Yeah, right.
You are able to let your guard down and believe it.
Believe in the unbelievable. Well, I think it's, so I go back to Jeff's point. So you come from both the hospitality and the wellness industry, and Rod keeps telling me these two worlds are merging, that I don't just go to get pampered as
fun. And medical and health, by the way.
I don't just go to a hotel to veg out and be served big drinks with umbrellas. Or stuff myself with food.
I thought that's what they're serving in the new recovery wings.
So it could be. So that somehow it's got to be more of an experience. It's got to be something that absorbs, Vegas transports me to another world. Disney transports me to another world, and I'm immersed in it, and it's all around me. And I'm. That's what virtual reality is supposed to promise. You know, that you get immersed in some new world here. Are they trying to make it immersive? Or are they trying to make it completely holistic? Or is it still just little one-off? Here's your ticket for the buffet. Here's your ticket for the pool. Here's your ticket for the massage.
Well, I think you have. It's interesting when you talk through the experience when you're there. But a lot of when you have the immersive experience, it's what happened when the day you decided to go to whatever the location may be.
Right.
Whether that be Disney, Vegas, wherever. How was that story told to you?
Hmm.
Was it the same beautiful people standing in the same picture that you see on everyone's brochure? Or did it start to already engage you in what that experience could be and how you can make it your own? So it starts well before there's a physical facility, in my mind.
And let me get another challenge to that. So then when you experience it, you have something in your head. You kind of see yourself doing this, and you get excited, right? I can see myself winning. I can see myself swimming. I can see myself doing in this vacation, in this place, in this experience, in this spa, relaxing. I picture it. Then when I go there, Does it have to just reinforce that? And then I go, it's exactly what I thought. Or does it challenge you and say, wow, that's not at all what I thought. This is much different than I thought. Good or bad, maybe good. Wow, that was even more exciting than I never thought it would be intellectually challenging.
I think it has to challenge you when you arrive, because you're just getting the preliminary what can be shared with you prior to arrival. Yeah. You've not stepped into the now space that you go, wow.
Right.
And I know you love that word. That's why I wanted to get it in there.
Yeah.
Or you could just say fun. But right. You now step into this space, and it allows you to use all of your senses and create your experience.
But isn't that the antithesis of where American culture has been moving? We like predictability. We like the sequel. We like McDonald's. You go to a McDonald's anywhere in the world, and that hamburger tastes the same. You like Budweiser beer because wherever they brew it, it tastes exactly the same. It doesn't challenge you or surprise you. It comforts you. It's exactly what I thought it would be like. And now you're saying maybe we don't need comfort food. Maybe we need...
No, it means your definition of comfort maybe is able to be wider than the narrow focus you've had or you've been convinced that it's all about.
I think of the best trips that I've been on were the ones I didn't have much expectation. I went to a trip to... we won two tickets to go to Montana on some drawing or something, and I thought, I'm not expecting much. That was such a cool trip. So I had no expectations when I went there. When I went to Hawaii, the one and only time, it was horrible. Not only because I got sick, but because everything was just seemed like I'd done this before at the beach here. I'd been to Disneyland. I'd been to the big resort. I'd been to the... Nothing was different about it in any way, shape, or form. It felt like a plastic dream I'd lived before.
So you're
in Maui. I went to Maui. Yeah.
So you're.
But
you're,
I think that's.
Go ahead.
I think that's where you have to challenge yourself, right, though, and don't go to the normal stop.
Right.
I mean, obviously there are normal stops with enormous theme parks and corporations, but when you travel to places, and I've been fortunate, especially with the cruise lines, to travel around the world.
Right.
And the key is go there and do what the local people do.
Yes.
Not what you read about in the brochure.
Right.
It's doing your homework and finding that restaurant or that activity or that playhouse that allows you to stimulate most, if not all, of the six aspects of wellness you were discussing earlier.
Yeah,
I agree.
And let me just share this. You know, this is such a new thing that's happening, where there's sort of a conscious awareness
in your industry or in the world.
Oh yeah, no, in this industry. I mean, right. Cornell University is a bastion of hospitality. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a very innovative center.
Don't they teach hotel management?
Yeah,
there and
cornerstone.
Stuff,
yeah. Right. Okay, of the hospitality industry. Right? Wouldn't you agree, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Right. And yet Cornell, okay, only last October, okay, had a symposium that was about the blending of healthcare and hospitality.
Wow.
Sorry, Jeff. And has only been a year old at that time, had what they call Institute for Healthy Futures. Okay? So that was in 2016. So only since 2015 has a really core brain trust for hospitality, been engaged consciously into doing this.
So let me ask you another question here because I'm lost. So I assume they taught pampering, how to give service, just like a good waiter, present a great meal and how to create the perfect experience. And I picture great hotels and great properties and spas even as a place of pampering. And you're saying it's not pampering anymore as well. What's the difference between pampering and
wellness? I'm going to just interject here. I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
All right? You keep talking about this as being relevant to the hotel industry, for example,
right,
being a product that is delivered to an end user.
Right.
Okay? Do you know how Marriott got to the top of the hotel industry?
No.
They had a reputation for making everybody care. Around 2016, before they got bought out by Starwood.
No.
Marriott, I think, do I have that right? Or before the acquisition? Before they bought Starwood. Sorry. My apologies. Yeah. They actually have a philosophy, a principle, a founding principle at Marriott.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I know they do.
That
yeah,
you
I know
take care
this.
Of your employees.
Yes.
And they will, in turn, take care of your customers.
And can I give you two examples of that?
So they actually implemented personal wellness programs.
For their employees?
Yes.
Well, I've said this before. I'll try and make it brief. 20 years ago, when I was an entertainment PR person, 30 years ago in the 80s, I had the opportunity to go down to a trade show in Orange County here. Stayed at the Hilton. There's only two big hotels across from the Orange County Convention Center, the Hilton and the Marriott. Went to the Hilton. Beautiful property. It was a disaster from start to finish. Key didn't work. People were rude. Nothing arrived on time. It was horrible. Went to the Marriott the next day. I went to the trade show and got there late. Like midnight, and I went down to use the hot tub because I was aching and tired, and of course it had just closed, and I was the only one down there, and so I went in anyway. It wasn't supposed to be open, and I went over the fence, and I went in, and now I realize there's no towel, and as I'm sitting there cold and angry, a guy walks by who's the pool boy, and he's picking up from the day all the towels and the other stuff, and he looks at me and he says, "Do you need a towel, sir?" He didn't say, "Get out of there. You're not supposed to be there." He said, "Do you need a towel, sir?" And I said, "Well, yeah." He went and got me one. And so I wrote to the manager of the Marriott. I said, "I don't know how you get people to care like that. They didn't care at your competitor's property. They did everything they could to make me feel unwelcome there." And I sent a message to the – I CC'd the guy at the Hilton. The Hilton guy never responded back. The Marriott guy, who I complimented, said, "Thank you. I'm going to read this to my staff. Here's a free night on us." He didn't have to give me a free night. They had a culture of that. And I was fortunate enough to work with a guy named Frank McFadden, who was a very famous entertainment PR person, and he knew Bill Marriott personally. And he said that's in his latter years, that's what Bill did, is travel around the country and go to properties incognito and see what the experience is like.
So what do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, I think it's, you know, they certainly, Marriott has an incredible culture. And it really, where all of the brands struggle is it comes down to the property level. And
right.
Do you get the right general manager and can you train them? I want to segue back to a little bit on the Cornell conversation.
Sure.
Again, because while they're just getting going in this, the last 3 years I've spent working with Mayo Clinic in bringing, so we talked about the medical side a little bit, bringing what Mayo Clinic's knowledge is in the wellness industry out to the hospitality industry.
Hmm.
They really did some exciting things with Mandarin Oriental, with Carlson Residor Group, to look at, not only look at menus, but deliver all of the wellness aspects, physical, psychological, A to Z, at different properties around the world.
Give me examples of that, because I can picture a healthier menu,
So give Paul a tease, Jeff,
yeah.
Because we're going to have Jeff on in May for an hour on this specifically. So tease him a little bit, Jeff.
Yeah, what kinds of they did some exciting things, brought Mayo Clinic's work on wellness into their properties here. Other than a healthy menu, what else does that mean?
So I'll use Bodrum Turkey as an example, beautiful Mandarin Oriental property. We went in and sent in exercise physiologists, physical therapists, had all of the programming around exercise physiology, which leads you more to the fitness side.
Right.
But then that brings you back into the nutritional side. They also did a lot of programming around Dr. Sood's book, Happiness. He's a physician at Mayo Clinic, and gave guests instructions and knowledge around being happy and how that helps you with your life and being well. So it was really taking.
I got to stop you. I can't picture this. Okay. So I check in at this property. I get exercise and I get food.
Yeah.
I don't get how are they going to tell me to be happy? How are they going to help me be happy other than exercise and food?
Through seminars and through education and engaging your mind.
Again, you have to be actively engaged.
So I go stay at a hotel, and they want me to be engaged and go to a seminar that night in the property there? What would that? I'm struggling to see how this would look. I've never seen a property like that. I've seen rooms. I've seen
you can't see him, Jeff, but he actually twitched in his chair when he was saying that.
I can't imagine. I'll give you one other. The only closest I've ever come to it, years ago I stayed at one of these W hotels. It's supposed to be really hip, and I don't know if they still are, but
right.
They were wild at the time. Went in San Diego. And they check in and they say, "We have a policy here, whatever, whenever." And so they have a whatever, whenever person. They call them that, something like that. And their job is you call them up and whatever you want, whenever you want it, that's what we're here to make you do. That's sort of on the happiness feeling. You need a ticket, we'll get you a ticket. You need your clothes cleaned, we'll get your clothes cleaned.
Okay,
it's more than a concierge. It's anything you want.
So
in this case, you would be selecting typically long prior to your arrival.
Right.
You would look at the 30 or 40 programming offerings, and it could be tour museum, as an example, as part of this wellness initiative.
Volunteer at an activity.
So by checking into a hotel, they're going to give me a list of things I could do, like volunteer at an activity with my reservation?
You're actually going to have the opportunity to select when you want to do it before you even arrive.
Mm-hmm.
You decide, on Tuesday, I get in on Monday night. On Tuesday morning, I would like to have my blood pressure taken. I would like to do a walk, and I'd like to see a museum.
And they set it up for you.
It's all ready to go, and you'll be guided the whole way.
Just like your concierge would set up tickets to a show.
Right.
Exactly. Same exact thing.
So that's the
That's
the aspect of that social well-being, you know, what have you. I mean, there are people that volunteer, like, especially when they have time on their hands, like, you know, maybe they're retired or they're semi-retired.
Habitat for Humanity.
Habitat for Humanity, stuff like that. Okay.
Right.
But just think about
The hotel would facilitate this. The hotel would suggest, give me a menu to choose from and help put
that
together.
There's a Ronald McDonald Walk happening in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think it's in 2 weeks. And then there was one that was happening in Orange County, okay?
Okay?
Ronald McDonald House, charity support, what have you. You wake up in the morning, let's say when you're on vacation.
At the Hilton.
And a lot of people take walks.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So now all of a sudden somebody says to you, well, you could go take a walk around the harbor or the Seaside Village or whatever it's called in Long Beach.
Right.
Okay? Seaport Village on that particular Sunday or Saturday. And in doing the walk that you would normally do, you're now doing it with the company of all these people and all this positive energy.
I get why that would be happy.
Towards giving back.
But you're telling
children.
Me that the Hilton, if there's a Hilton, I don't know, there's a Hilton in downtown Long Beach, that the Hilton, that I'd make a reservation at the Hilton, and somehow they would communicate back. I wouldn't go ask them at the front desk, hey, I feel like taking a walk, where do I go? And they'd say, well, I don't know, you can go down here, and there's a Ronald McDonald Walk over there. That's passive. They would actively try and suggest, point out, facilitate, help me to discover these things, as opposed to the reactive way that they normally do it.
You're absolutely correct. And this is, you know, this
And if they're not doing it, they should be.
And it's an initiative we pushed out between Mayo Clinic and Mandarin Oriental, and something that both groups are very interested in.
Wow.
It's the future.
That's revolutionary.
It's just going to take a little time to get there. But people need to start thinking that way. Medical facilities need to think about that and how can they work with the people coming into their community to help educate them and provide different services and opportunities. And as importantly, the hospitality industry has to become more open-minded in blending with that medical group, the spa industry with the medical group. It is happening, and it's happening on a small scale, but it will happen on a large scale.
At one time in my career, I did travel around the country a lot, like every week, during a couple of things I did. And so there were certain hotel chains that I preferred, and so I'd go stay at them. And the worst ones, you'd go, and I'm Catholic, so I had to go to Mass, find a church everywhere else, every Sunday to go to. The worst ones had no clue. The average one had a list under somewhere. Let me look for it. And here, I think there's a list of Catholic churches somewhere around here. I don't know how to get to them, but here's our list of them. The better ones would, and I use that as an example, would give you recommendations. Oh, you know, go down to St. Mary's here. Oh, go to the restaurant over there. It's really good. So I felt like I was staying at somebody's house and they were guiding me through the community. But I never had anybody actively suggest, hey, while you're here, why don't you want to go see a museum? You want to go take a walk? You want to go help the homeless? How would you even know what I wanted? Do I have to fill out a survey beforehand or you just give me a big menu and I surf through it?
How intrusive do you want the technology that is already out there that informs everybody what the heck you basically had for breakfast today to be used?
But if you're coming in and I'm providing you a menu of options,
right,
right,
and you can say, this is what I'd like to know about. You're already going through the whole thing of making the reservation. Once you understand, you know, it's in the system that these are the things, I like these seven things, now wherever you travel within that group, those seven things are identified for you and you don't have to do it again.
Wow.
Well, and
or I may want to try something new, and I say I'd like to try this next time.
Well, and let me offer up this too. And a lot of times you may say, well, yes, maybe I would like it, but why would that company do it? Why would that property do it? Right?
Yeah, right. That's
I'll tell you why. Because that is, we talk about this on the show all the time, that all news is local, all engagement is local, right?
Right.
That property in Long Beach, listing and promoting, not because of any financial quantifiable gain, that activity for Ronald McDonald House endears that property to the community. They are a vested partner in that community and in the well-being of that community through the well-being give back to the kids.
You sound like a hippie.
But you also have...
Did I happen to thank you, baby boomers, for what you have said?
I was a hippie. Where did all this come back again?
What were you saying, Jeff?
No, I would say, well, whatever brand name happens to be on that property, you're going to look for that same brand when you
right.
go to your next city.
Because now it stands for more.
Exactly.
There's more substance and authenticity. Now, it could be completely manipulated,
yeah.
okay, and on purpose to garner that emotional touch, right? But at the same time, you as a person who's going to that property now will look forward to actually having that. In fact, if you experience that from one concierge in Long Beach, you may go over to, like, I don't know, Telluride or something, and you'll be going to the property and you'll be asking concierge, so where do I find your listings about activities that are taking place? Where is the farmer's market on that weekend Sunday? Right?
Right.
But would they ever get to, are they just a collector of information that they share with you, or do they actively promote? In other words, would they say, hey, we have a van leaving in the morning because a whole bunch of our guests are going over to the Ronald McDonald Walk. You may want to join them. We've taken steps not just to tell you about it. Here's not just a smorgasbord of things to choose from. Here's not just a directory of things that you want to know here. But we are actively, we have a wine tasting this afternoon. Come on down. We have a We've organized a trip for all our employees over to, I don't know, the harbor tonight here to watch the stars come out. Would they ever organize events like that and then try and pull? And you're like, oh, well, I'll go with you. I hadn't thought about that.
The best ones do that. I happened to spend, Michelle and I were in the Poconos for a few days this past fall, and we made no plans because I like to go places and not have plans and see what happens.
Me right. too.
Right. While we were there, we went to a play that we had no idea, would have never had, because one of the people at the front desk said, you know, tomorrow night we have a van going to a play.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We were walking through the lobby. Hey, we happen to have a wine tasting starting in a half hour. Would you like to participate?
Sure.
Why not?
Why not? Well, I got nothing else to do. Sure. Yeah.
Well, those that are proactive are going to be hugely successful, yeah. and those that think they can put
that
on the counter lose.
Well, and let me just touch on another thing relevant to the wellness thing, which we were talking about, is it's also an opportunity for multi-generational, right? Like if you think about the fact that, you know, some people go on family trips and vacations, it may be a grandparent and the grandchild,
right?
That's joining maybe one of the parents, or the other one couldn't get away, or something
of that
nature.
About, right, taking a trip with their grandson if they, you know,
right.
a special trip or something, or a daughter and grandson.
So, what activities would you do with your grandchild, right? And that wellness is another opportunity that could be multi-generational.
But I just got to hit this one more time, because what he said is I've never experienced. I've seen some better. I have been off the road for 20 years, but I've seen some better properties have lists of things to do, a better list of restaurants and a worse list of restaurants, a better list of what's happening in the town, or a terrible list, or they have it on the TV screen or something.
Yeah.
I've never, ever, ever seen where they were organizing stuff themselves and or actively either creating their own events like a wine tasting or actively taking people, hey, we're participating in this. You get 10% off if you ride with us tonight. We've already organized to go see this play, this concert, this something that you didn't know was here. We're taking a van load of people there. You get 50% off because we've already pre-negotiated this. That would be huge. I'd take advantage of every one of those.
I mean, think about this. I mean, and this one actually happened to us as well. When's the last time you went on a Halloween horror hayride?
Never.
Talk about multi-generational?
I'd love to do that, yeah.
Yep.
In a property, hey, we have a couple seats left. It's $10. Do you want to go? Yeah. I haven't been on a hayride in decades.
Right.
Had a blast.
I can see that.
And there were children, and there were grandparents, and there were parents.
So whose job in the property is it to go find, to either develop those events or reach out and cut a deal with events or discover that these events are even happening? That's an active role that somebody has to play. Is there an event coordinator at these properties now?
It's just a matter of... Go ahead.
There has to be at the events, the properties that are going to do this. You really need an activity coordinator, an event coordinator.
Right.
A lot of times that's looked at as, should it be part of the group business? It's far, far bigger than the group business. I mean, unless you're a hotel that 99% of your business is groups,
right.
Most of your guests are two or three people staying in a room that are looking for something to do.
Right.
So you establish this activity coordinator and you allow them the freedom to create these events and then offer them to people. And you're always looking for something to do when you're traveling.
You know, I'll give you an idea of what maybe the model begins to look like based on, and it's something that's already happens. Right, somebody's coming into New York City.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to stay at a particular hotel. Let's say that the hotel is near Broadway,
mm-hmm.
and I know this happens in the UK a lot too. Right. And you say, while you're with us, would you be interested in seeing any of the shows? Can I set up some, you know, tickets for you for mm-hmm. certain shows and stuff like that? Oh, well, what shows are playing? And da da da. It's the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
The format is already in place, right? It's just a matter of expanding the options and the variety.
But it takes it further in that they might say, we already have a block of, or we already have a discount set up with this one, or even more importantly, we've set up something unique. Don't go somewhere else and see it. We've got a wine tasting. We've got a murder mystery tonight. We've got a hayride that we've put together because it's Halloween.
I understand, but what I'm saying is I specifically use that example because it's for shows that are on Broadway or in the West End.
That's been the traditional role of the concierge is
right,
to find
but,
you
but
the
those,
tickets.
But those are shows that are not taking place with the hula dancers out on the outside lawn on the left side of the property because, you know, we have a luau thing that happens every... This is a specifically show. This is an outside entity that we have sort of a partnership or symbiotic connection with, and that's symbiotic connection model does not have to be limited to theater. It can be nonprofits. It can be farmers markets. It can be all kinds of different stuff. And I just use specifically the model of weekend because it's sort of a defined time.
I'll tell you, when I was in the bar business, there was another business I had, and we'd set up, build these Irish pubs. We had one up in San Bernardino, and we weren't far from the ski resorts or from the big concert venue there. And I was always, I just trying to be creative. Why would you come to our bar and why would you create a connection with our bar and become one of our Cheers regulars over and over again? Maybe we should be creating activities that as a bar patron we all go do. And so I went and approached all the ski resorts and I said, why don't we set up a ski weekend where we'll get a van and we'll bring people up and you cut us a deal and, you know, all our... It'd be another reason to come into the bar. They'll drink for a couple hours, and then they'll go up and ski, or after, or vice versa, or something here. I couldn't get anybody to buy into that. This is the 80s and early 90s. It's probably the 90s now. They were all like, it sounds interesting, but none of that ever happened. I could never create... The rest of the owners in the bar were like, well, what does that have to do? We're just taking them out of the bar. And all the other properties are like, well, yeah, but, you know, if you want group tickets, yeah, but we're not going to do anything
But hasn't your focus yourself changed? Hasn't your interest in that, this whole point of the show is that basically it's a journey of aging and it's things that interest you today are not...
I love the idea. I'm just saying, I saw this and we experimented 20, 30 years ago. My impression was none of that ever happened. And it's all still like that. You're saying the world has changed more than I realize.
Jeff?
Well, I think it has changed in some aspects in that way. And in Rochester, Minnesota, where Mayo's based, they're doing Destination Medical Center. And one of the things that we spent a lot of time working with them on was, how do you partner? You talked earlier about it's about the community for the business. Well, how do you partner with all of the small little mom and pops that are doing great guest service and delivering, in this particular case, in the winter, it could be snowshoeing or snowmobiling or ice fishing.
Right.
Things that people wouldn't otherwise think about. So that that becomes really, it looks like a single reservation point for all of it. And in the summer, it could be fly fishing.
Yeah,
it could be
right.
Water skiing. And cities and areas and regions that are trying to market themselves, and more of them are trying to market to this wellness component,
right.
They're going to be forced to bring those groups together if they're going to succeed, because no one can offer it all.
There's some speculation that there's a...
And never will be, because the interest, again, will change. And so it's more about a collaborative relationship that is flexible than actually committing into this sort of integrated resource, which that in itself then also provides, if you will, a wellness, a social wellness for that business in its community.
And the small entrepreneurial companies will move very rapidly with what the market demands.
Yep.
And they will adjust to that.
Who's doing this well out there? Anybody you can give a shout out to that you've seen has taken this hospitality approach or wellness approach into the hospitality better than others?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's one place I visited, it was brought up earlier, but Kalispell, Montana.
Yes.
Yeah. They, again, going there, it was go cross country skiing. Hey, we got a dog sled guy. All of the options that are available, and it was all orchestrated through a single point of contact and a single reservation point.
And they suggest it to you when you check in. Hey, you know, we got lots of fun. I don't know what your plans are, but we've got this and this and this. It's not just up on the bulletin board. Somebody at the front desk is actively touting this and talking it up.
The minute you make your reservation, by the way, if you're going to want a dog sled, there's very limited availability.
Yeah, I didn't know you could get one, yeah.
You might want to get a reservation. Now, whether there is or isn't, you don't know. But the reality is only a couple people can get on that sled.
Yeah.
And those dogs can't run all day every day. So, it's, you know, they do a great job of positioning it to you and letting you prepare and get ready for your trip.
And what property is this? Is this part of a chain or just a one-off? Who does this?
It is a one-off. Actually, we did it at a place called Grouse Mountain Lodge.
So with that being said, again,
down to our last 5 minutes,
you may be not looking for this at the larger chains.
Yes.
Which again means until they catch
that's
up.
That's how you go to a smaller chain.
Well, you know,
it's the
old analogy, right? A smaller entrepreneurial entity is almost like a small little speedboat. When it needs to change gears and take on a different direction, it's easy and malleable enough to do.
Right.
When you have a large corporation, unless it philosophically has built into its way, like Apple to a certain extent was under Steve Jobs,
right.
Is that you have the flexibility to basically expand and explore. It takes a long time for that ocean liner to make an adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're absolutely correct. It will take them longer, but some of the even in the chain, some of the more remote locations, those owners will make moves a little more quickly than the chain.
Because they have a little bit of a different arrangement with that chain, and the property
right.
itself and the scale of the property itself gives that opportunity. So what I guess Jeff and I are both saying is that to look for those uniquenesses, maybe to look for them requires a little bit more exploration as well. Like, it's not on the beaten path. It's the road a little bit less traveled, you know?
I love the idea of a property. You're talking primarily hotels here now, where a hotel would seek out what's unique in its community and offer it. Dog sledding. I can't get dog sledding in Orange County here. So when I travel, I was there on business, or I'm traveling through on a way to somewhere else. All of a sudden, that stop becomes more than just a rest stop. It becomes something I'll remember for the rest of my life and talk about.
Well, and it's,
I'll give you one more example. I mean, if you've traveled to Park City, Utah,
yeah,
most people don't go visit the Olympic Park. But at the Olympic Park, if you're educated, you can actually get on a real bobsled and ride with a professional driver.
Wow.
On a bobsled course.
How cool would that be? Yeah.
It's really cool. But if you don't know about it,
I didn't know.
You know, again, the property, if you have a great property, they let you know these things ahead of time and upon arrival.
And have an arrangement already in place that they bring it up and suggest an activity to you, and then they facilitate it and make it happen. I'm forever grateful.
Exactly.
Right. And the funny aspect of this is that, again, it requires personal engagement and proactive, active engagement.
Right.
Right? And you have to take ownership of your well-being in life.
But I've never thought of a hotel as cared about my well-being. They want to make me comfortable. They might want to even pamper me. But it was just for a couple of nights to give me a good night's rest and to send me on my way. I never thought of them as caring whether... And I, more and more, they're just concerned with room counts and room nights and how many they've sold and how filled the property is. It's just a numbers game.
Well, but Paul, remember, you know, it's funny. You said something about properties that allow, that engage in the local community, give me that local experience, right?
Discover it.
But yet, hotels have been doing this relevant to their interior, call it interior design, right? Hotels stepped away a long time ago from the model that was the same Hilton as the same Hilton, the same Hilton.
Right.
And they started to do what they were referred to as destination influenced design.
Right.
Right. So that when you walked into that property in Hawaii, you got a sense of being in Hawaii, almost to the point of too much thematics, right?
Yes, right.
And some people pull it off because your expectations is to allow for that much thematics, like, for example, at Disney.
Right.
But versus if you go to like a Orient Express property, for example, in Hawaii, you want an alluding to the Hawaiian spirit and the Aloha spirit, but you don't want, you know, tiki torches every single
exactly.
corner. So they've already done this. They've already kind of adopted that. But where they have not, what we're saying is, take it beyond one dimensional, and put it in that same philosophy into the embracing and bringing in of the environment around you, to that end user, to that guest, the guests on your property, and not only in terms of the swim with the dolphins or go out to the scuba dive, you know, on the crater, but
right.
actually other things that feed into the six dimensions of their wellness.
Yeah, right. There's a lecture going on that you might be interested in. There's some interesting work on the volcano. You can go see the volcano, but there's a lecture on the volcano. My father was a road warrior for much of his life for Chrysler Corporation. Went out Monday, came back Friday. I have many friends that have lived that life as road warriors. And all of them say the same thing. I've been everywhere, but I've never seen anything. I saw the hotel at the airport. I saw the hotel where I did the meeting. I saw the hotel where I stayed when I drove out and visited the dealer and came back. The hotel was a place of comfort and refuge, but it was nothing more than that, and they all looked and felt exactly the same. And that you wanted, in a certain sense, they liked it because it was McDonald's. It was familiar. It was the same thing over and over. What you're suggesting is something, a whole different approach to the hospitality. It's not just lodging anymore.
I would say that is actually a true assessment, wouldn't you say, Jeff?
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And, you know, the road warrior thing, I mean, when I was with the cruise lines, I would get to 60-plus countries a year, so you can imagine
how
much travel I want. And the one thing that we did, and this goes back to taking some accountability for your own wellness, anytime you visited a city or wherever you went, before you went, you figured out the one thing you were going to do for you.
Hmm.
So that could be visit the Anne Frank Museum.
Right.
That could be whatever that is. You just take a few hours and say, I'm going to experience something in this town. That could be in the Midwest, the supper club that you've heard about. But it's something that gives you more of an experience than just I'm punching another key in another hotel room door.
It's funny you say that because I instantly flash back to my days, limited couple of years when I was a road warrior. I was at a trade show and Dallas, the only time I've ever been to Dallas. And so it's a big trade show. We're there for a couple of days. There's booths, there's exhibits, there's conferences where all your day is eaten up. And at the end of one of the days, I was with, you know, chocolate dealers and a bunch of other guys my age, other reps and other dealers and stuff. And I said, we're in Dallas, right? I said, we're in downtown Dallas. We're only a couple blocks from where Kennedy was assassinated. Let's go over and see it. And everybody's like, let's go and see it. Why? We got to be up at 3 o'clock. I got to tear the booth down. We got a meeting with the dealer at this and this and this. The idea of leaving the property and going 4 blocks to go see something that none of us had ever seen, that we were all men of a certain age. That was a momentous time when Kennedy was killed. It's one of those moments like 9/11 I'll never forget. And I went and did it, and nobody came with me. And I said, well, the hell with you. I'll skip the meal, and I'll just drive over there. I'll spend an hour. And I still remembered. It was still vivid. And everybody else was like, wow, you left the property. You can't. In fact, a couple of them said, well, what if your boss comes looking for you? Or what if somebody needs you? You can't leave the property here.
How many people travel to Hawaii and never go see Pearl Harbor?
Exactly.
Yeah, or go to New York and never see the Statue of Liberty. That was me for years, yeah.
So, with that being said, I would like to welcome Jeff to the show today and invite him to come back in May, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, and we will do this as well, because I also want to give a shout-out to Michelle and Jeff for being supportive of the pop-up store that we did, a sort of concept store that we did called Omen Your Home in December of last year, where we basically took this idea of wellness and actually said, we understand that you have limited time. We understand that, you know, if you're going on vacation, then you're just basically doing it when you're on vacation, where you're getting time to yourself or whatever.
Right.
But we really believe in this wellness element being a regiment of wellness that's constant, and that some items maybe can be done at home.
Mm.
And they have an amazing lounger that is a vibration technology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's phenomenal, and I will own up that I fell asleep on that thing way too many times during Christmas, leading up to Christmas. But it was a phenomenal lounger, and I'm going to give Jeff just a couple of minutes. And this is one of the things that you can bring into your own home, you know, into your own office, to try to instill this sort of repetitive regimen of wellness where you take personal accountability,
yes,
for your wellness, and you are able to actually achieve those goals that you set for yourself in between those visits maybe to exotic locations. So tell a little bit about the lounger for Paul's benefit, Jeff.
Then we got to wrap up.
Sure. Thank you very much. This lounger was developed over the last about 15 years by a neurologist, Dr. Dan Cohen, and he's famous for bringing the Breathe Right nasal strip out, and this became a passion of his. It has magnetic sound and vibration therapy within it, and it's a zero-gravity seat, so you're pretty much in the same position as a chair in a space rocket that would lift you off and take all the pressure off of you. And what it does between the magnetic sound and vibration therapy is it induces a similar to a state of meditation. So while you may not fall all the way to sleep, you won't be awake. You'll kind of be in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit, relax. I've had this conversation. We have Mayo Clinic doing some research on it right now. We've had conversations with the docs, and they say, you know, I tell people to go meditate, and no one does it because they're not going to do it for an hour if they can even achieve it.
Right.
But if I tell them to go sit in a lounge for an hour, everyone is in. And they gain some of those benefits. It is extremely relaxing. And what's even more interesting is about 10 minutes after you finish your time in the lounge, and that can be 20, 30 minutes to an hour. But 10, 15 minutes after you get out, you just have an incredible amount of energy. And it's like the ultimate power nap in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
If you did a 30-minute session. So we're excited to have it on the market. It's going into the spa market, the day spa market. Some of the hotel chains are looking at it for their wellness rooms. It's also being played in the health club market as well. So we're very excited to have it on, and it was a privilege to be able to bring it down and share it at your events.
Thanks for doing that, Jeff. Again, you and Michelle is very supportive, and I appreciate it. And again, it was taking it out of the norm of thinking.
You know what you should do?
Oh, boy. You don't have room for it here.
You should bring it into the studio. We'll just all try it on the air, and we'll react
on video, live feed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't only imagine what would happen with three people having a conversation way back in the lounge.
You know what, Jeff?
They hear things they never thought of.
You know what, Jeff?
Yeah.
You're talking to two guys that had a crackling fire on YouTube and were drinking single malt scotch for a Christmas special the first year.
Yeah, exactly.
So
we like to experience. He had me get a massage for the first time or second time in my life on air here.
So maybe he should have a vibration for the first time on the air.
Ooh.
No, it's really phenomenal. And what was really appealing for me is, again,
we'll pull a couple of the chairs out here.
Yeah, he's going to move furniture for you, Jeff. So you know now you got to bring it in. But it was taking it out of the normal thinking. It was challenging you to see wellness or your ability to do that. To Jeff's point, you're laying on a lounger. Mm-hmm. You're in an elevated position like you're about to take off in a rocket. There's zero gravity almost in the way that you're mm-hmm. laying, right? And you're getting a benefit of this where you have a power nap that comes out of it, right? If you think about it, okay, that philosophy was limited to maybe executives with a corner window and stuff that, right? But you can do that in your own home. And if we can basically instill that possibility in people's mind that you can take ownership of your own wellness, of your own well-being.
Your space, your place to do this.
Your space, your place. That's a good one, Jeff. We should write that down. Your space, your place.
Very good one.
You need to just get one of those like NASA astronaut helmets. And maybe somebody in a
suit. Well, it's interesting you say this because for a number of years I was involved in what the one you guys laugh at, the other spa industry, the hot tub industry. I was deeply involved in that for a number of years, and that's when I was traveling the road and doing all this stuff and helped create some products and helped do marketing for some big companies. And one of the big ways hot tub spas are still sold and all the products accompany it is that the home shows and the county fairs, the old, come on down, try it. And now you don't hop in the hot tub necessarily, but you sit in it dry and you picture yourself in it. And a lot of the dealers in that industry, I left probably 7-8 years ago, were getting into loungers because they were doing the same thing. Come on over at the county fair. Put down your cotton candy here and sit in this thing here and experience it. Or at malls or at kiosks or other places where you got people to experience it. And once they did, they were sold.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
So with that, I appreciate you being here, my friend. I look forward to having you on the air in May.
Yeah, and just figure out a way to get the chair up here.
I want to just give a couple more references for people who have been listening that are interested in this topic. They can find out a little bit more about some stuff here. One of them is check out globalwellnessday.org, which is coming up in June, and look at the 7 steps of Global Wellness Day Manifesto, which, again, are very simple steps that you can start inputting into your life. Walk an hour, drink more water, do not use plastic bottles, eat organic food, do a good deed, have a family dinner, sleep at 10 o'clock. All these items, a lot of them, if you cross-reference them against that six dimensions of wellness, you'll find that a lot of these very simple tasks actually feed into those 6 dimensions of wellness.
Can I give you one more?
Sure. What's your 7th?
Learn something today. Learn something new today. That's what I get to do every day here in this show. Every day I learn something new. The changes are going on here.
Intellectual wellness.
Yeah, learn something new. I don't think we focus on that one much anymore.
And for those that are heady or, I would say, what would we refer to ourselves as? Wellness nerds, Jeff, I guess, is there's an interesting book out there. It's called Health, Tourism, and Hospitality. Wellness, spas, and medical travel.
Put that in your blog.
It's by Melanie Smith, and you look it up. It may be something that's now at this point on Google Books or Google Books, ebooks. But it's an interesting one. It talks about differences in different countries. Because again, we didn't touch really on how wellness is not even the same across borders. That people's take on it is different. You got an industry that basically caters to hospitality across the planet. How do you now even add that added level of engagement on that concierge or that program developer in being country-specific? So, Jeff, how can people get hold of you in the meantime between now and when you are on the show again?
Very easy. I will give 2 ways. One, I'm happy to give out a phone number. It's 425-213-9623, and they can go to www.soltechwellbeing.com and reach me there.
And how do you spell that?
SOLTEC Wellbeing, WELLBEING.
Soltech, okay.
Thank you, Jeff, so much for being here. It was a very stimulating conversation. I can't wait to have you back in May.
With the chair.
Thank you for inviting me.
with the chair.
With the lounge, he says.
I think he's gotten the message. We might have to just take him to the chair. If the chair won't come to Muhammad might just have to go to the chair.
Well, we might have to buy one for all of our guests here. Think of the kinds of shows we could do with this mind-altering relaxation.
Next thing you know, you'll want me to relay out the space plan of the studio.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Come on.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you so much. My best to Michelle. And thanks again for being part of Om in Your Home. I'll look forward to having you on the air in May.
Thanks a lot. Bye, gentlemen.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.